Hello, everybody. Welcome to Season Ticket. I'm Chris Gasper. It's Tuesday, November 28th. We have a great show for you today. We're coming to you from Gillette Stadium, where we're talking with New England Patriots three-time Pro Bowl safety, Devin McCourty. Devin, thanks for joining us here on Season Ticket.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me.
I think a lot of Patriots fans know this, but maybe there are some people out there who don't. You have a twin brother.
Uh-huh.
Your twin brother, Jason, plays for the Cleveland Browns. They have not won a game.
Yeah, he doesn't have 17 consecutive winning seasons.
And he's never played a playoff game. So you guys share a Twitter account. Can you share some victories with him, maybe some playoff appearances with him? Why do they all have to go to you, Dev?
It's funny, though. Now that he's in Cleveland, they haven't won a game, but he actually gets way more attention on our social media mentions and all of those things than I do. The Brown faithful are strong. They're not winning games, but he's playing pretty well. Out there in Cleveland, so he has a ton of moral victories on there. Guys telling him he's playing well, he had a good game. So, you know, he won't win much, maybe not all year, but, you know, you got to take the moral victories when you play in Cleveland, I guess.
Do you feel bad for him at all?
I do. Just because me being around him, he's such a competitor, such a hard worker, especially, you know, this offseason, you know, getting released from Tennessee, I think 2 or 3 weeks after free agency, so kind of, you know, feeling the disrespect of, you know, them releasing him and not giving him kind of a fair shot to get back out there. You know, I seen he just went to work this offseason, coming off, you know, he had, a shoulder injury last year and he dealt with a groin the year before. So I think he was just so focused on proving to himself and other people that he could still play the game at a high level. So when you see someone put that much into it, you just hoping, you know, it was going to be hard to go 1-15 last year for the Browns and then all of a sudden win 9 or 10 games, go to the playoffs. But, you know, I was hoping he would get some type of, you know, wins or just a better season for them to be where they are now. I know it's tough for him, but he's a competitor. He enjoys waking up, going to work every day and trying to fix it.
Yeah, the Browns are 0-11. I'm calling it right now. They will win a game this year. There's no way. Your brother and the Browns are not going to go 0-16.
They'll find a way.
They'll find a way. What's interesting, you mentioned social media. You guys share a social media account, at McCourty Twins. It's the Twitter account for you and your brother. How did that come about, and what's it like to share a Twitter account? Because that's kind of a really personal thing, and you're sharing it, obviously, with your twin. And sometimes I think people go on there, and it's like you guys have to tag each one of the tweets with, you know, this is a Devin tweet, this is a Jason tweet.
Some people get angry. You know, we get the angry tweets, like, this is stupid. Why do you guys share a Twitter? Why do you guys share Instagram? Keep it simple. Mom wanted it. She wanted us to do a lot of things that even if we didn't play together, that would align us together, whether that's off the field when we do marketing stuff, our charity work is together. So it just fit that our social media would be together. And it's actually been pretty cool just to do those different things together and to see, you know, what we can do in our outreach through social media. And we have a lot of fun with each other's fans, whether it's, you know, him talking trash about the Patriots and, you know, different things that we've gone through, or, you know, me talking about him not winning many games in Tennessee or Cleveland. So it's been fun, and I think it keeps us pretty competitive off the field in different cities too. So we've had fun with it.
Yeah, and speaking of fun, I mean, I think you guys defensively are having fun the way you're playing. Great game against Miami, only 10 points allowed on defense. One thing I've noticed that's happened is you guys aren't giving up as many big plays. The first 4 games of the year when the team went 2-2, there were 19 pass plays of 20 yards or more that were surrendered. Since that time, in the 7 games you guys have played, it's 19 pass plays of 20 yards or more. You talk all the time about communication in the secondary, but what does that mean, and what did you guys do to be able to be on the same page and fix some of the problems that were happening earlier in the year?
I think the biggest part was we played better. Obviously, we had some communication things, but I think anytime you get new guys, it's a new season, it's the beginning of the season, it's automatically like, oh, they're not communicating, especially when you see guys are cut loose and wide open. Everyone's instincts is like, well, someone blew the coverage. And at times it was just us not playing, you know, either the coverage right, you know, and, you know, that's not always communication. That's, you knowing what you're supposed to do, you just don't play it right. So I think it was, you know, obviously a little bit of communication, but I think a lot of it was, you know, us just playing better football and playing together. You know, it was, you know, if a guy makes a mistake, someone else is playing so hard and hustling that they make up for it and you don't even notice it. And it's so many things coming together that we kind of knew would take time. But like you said earlier in the show, you were a guy that said 16-0. So when you're supposed to go 16-0, there's not supposed to be any time where you need to get better or improve. You know, people expected us to come out of the gates right away and just be this unstoppable machine. And I think it was a credit to just the guy's character. You know, after we lost that Carolina game, the sky was definitely falling, you know, and offensively we were playing pretty good football. You know, they were putting up 30-something points a game. And, you know, for us defensively coming back in after that game was tough because, you know, we kind of knew, you know, leaving that game, it was like, you know, this game falls on our shoulders. You know, if we just helped out maybe on one series, we win the game. So I give it to guys. You know, we came back and, you know, we went and we just said, let's just go, guys. Like, there's no tomorrow right now. Like, we just got to put everything into it. And I think that's just hard work. You know, obviously the players and the coaching staff putting in a lot of time to fix it, to get it right, to if it's changing calls or, you know, walking through this extra and having an extra meeting, guys went all in. And I think you're seeing that kind of pay off. And, you know, that's why we've been able to be productive over the last seven games. It's just the hard work that we put in. It wasn't, as Bill would say, it wasn't a magic potion or pill that we took to fix all the problems.
Oh, I'm sure Bill has lots of sayings. We'll get to those later on in the conversation. It's interesting what you just said, though, there about, you know, the expectations for the team and people not giving you guys maybe the same time another team gets to sort of find their identity and improve. So let me ask you this. Coming out of training camp, did you see any of this coming, some of those issues defensively with new people? Because it was certainly a surprise to us, but you raise a really good point that every year's a new year, and you guys did have new guys in the secondary, a guy like Stephon Gilmore, and you need some time to gel there. So maybe the expectations weren't realistic. Did you see any signs that maybe what happened the first four games was going to happen?
I won't say you've seen signs. But I will say 16-0 was very unrealistic. I think we all knew that as players. You play a couple years in this league to just think you're going to go out there and win 16 games, even though that's what you strive for because, you know, no one goes out there planning to lose. But to just think that you're going to, you know, roll out the footballs and just steamroll all 16 opponents is very unrealistic. But I think throughout training camp, we kind of felt that process of, you know, each day getting better. But we also knew that we had some growing pains. You know, Bill is always very honest with us, and he always, you know, if a practice doesn't go well or a period doesn't go well, especially throughout that training camp time when you're just trying to get better, it's the fundamentals, you're trying to build that foundation, he shoots it to us straight. And I think we kind of knew that we had to get better. I don't think we went into the season thinking like, you know, we just did something that no one's ever done in preseason. We had the best camp ever that, you know, has ever been in the last 40 years. I don't think we left that. We knew we still had things to work on, but we still also felt confident that as a team, we were a good football team. Now we could go out there and, you know, beat Kansas City and win those early games, but we just fell short. We didn't, you know, we wasn't as ready as we thought when we went into Kansas City, and I thought they were more ready to go at that point in the season. And, you know, we picked it up a little bit going to New Orleans. And then, you know, you win a shootout kind of against Houston that easily could have went either way. And I think we even knew that going into that game because we went down there and practiced with them. And, you know, whatever anyone thought of them in the first two games, we knew, you know, from going against them that they had a good football team. And then you lose to Carolina. It was kind of like, all right, this is a part of the process. You know, I guess 8 years in, you know, I've been 2-2 in a season before, you know, so it wasn't, you know, like, dang, this is uncharted territory. What do we do now? It was kind of just put our head down and work. So, you know, you couldn't see everything, but, you know, I always know the season's not, it's not what it seems like it's going to be in the beginning of the season. You know, in 15, after the Super Bowl year, it was kind of like when Revis and Browner left, everyone was like, well, there goes that good defense. There goes the secondary. You know, Vince left. They don't really have much out there. And then we go 10-0 to start the season. You know, and then you lose four of the last six. So you just got to keep working. You don't know how the season will go.
What's it like being in the meetings with Bill? You mentioned he's really honest with you guys. But when things aren't going well, what is it like with Bill? Is he maybe a little calmer than we see where he's just, look, guys, we just got to do these, focus on these four or five things? Or is he someone who's letting you know that this performance is terrible and he's letting you know in a big way?
I would say it's a balance. You definitely know. If the performance is terrible, you definitely know. But the thing that I've learned and that I have, like, tremendous amount of respect is how he's able to always have a good feel for what the team needs. And, you know, sometimes as a player, you don't even notice it in the moment. But when you look back, you're kind of like, then he kind of knew, you know, exactly what we needed. You know, I still remember in 2014, we lose to Kansas City and we come in a locker room, you know, I think it was like 44-14. And, you know, everyone's kind of expecting, you know, Bill to like rip us or like, and he comes in the locker room after the game. He's like, I'm proud of the way we fought today. You know, we fell short. But I tell you one thing, if we fight like that for the rest of this season, like, we'll be okay. And I think guys walked away kind of like, and, you know, I think that was just him having, you know, a great understanding of what he had in the locker room, what he saw. Obviously, he has a ton of experience of coaching football. So, but I also thought, you know, coming off a huge loss, Monday Night Football, you know, we got a boatload of confidence from our head coach after that loss, you know, right after that loss, which I think is very hard to get from a team. But I think he's always like that. Like, you can win a ton of games and you think everything's going well and you can come out of a game and he'd be totally disappointed in the way you played. And it's kind of like, you know, on the outside, everyone's like, oh, this team's the greatest. And then you come in there on a Monday and it's like, if we play like that again, we're going to lose. Straight like that. And you're like, dang, didn't we win? And, you know, it's always that balance, I think, with him that I think is the reason why he's been so successful. And, you know, if you buy into that as a player and as a team for whatever year you're in, you have a chance to be successful because he understands how you win in this league.
The sustained success here is incredible. And we mentioned the 17 years. When guys come to this team, is there a little bit of culture shock?
A lot of times it kind of depends on where you came from. Like a David Harris came here and, you know, he played under Coach Mangini. So there are some like crossover a little bit, you know, Mangini was under Bill. But then there's other guys that come from, you know, an environment, a culture that's not as, you know, hard and so demanding. Like after, like I said, after a win, you get ripped about what you did wrong. So sometimes it is, you know, guys come here and it could be in the spring where I think for a lot of teams, the spring is kind of like, let's get back into things. Let's, you know, get our feet under, you know, here. It's like, we got this amount of practice until training camp starts. So this is kind of a part of training camp. So we need to build. So like we come in April and it's straight to it. And I think some guys are kind of like wide-eyed, like, what did I just get into? And you start to see, you know, why you're doing that, especially once you get into the preseason games or the early part of the season, or, you know, you start to see like, all right, there's a method to this madness. And, you know, it takes each guy a different amount of time, I think, to get used to it. You know, even rookies, even if you're not, you know, a veteran coming from another team, but even rookies that come from different styles of programs out of college, you come here and it could be a huge cultural shock. But I think the one great thing about this team is a locker room, you know, always each year seems to bond together and create a bond through whether it be a hard spring or a tough beginning to the season that brings the guys in the locker room closer, which enable, I think, helps everyone deal with, whether it's the culture change, whether it's family things, off the field stuff, it helps you cope and still be able to perform and play good football.
One thing when I think about Bill, and someone asked me about a Patriots team, a Bill Belichick coach team, I say that they'll be better in December than they were in September. The stuff you just talked about, is that why?
I think so. I think it's an understanding of we have to continue to get better. It's a sense of urgency to really go do it. I think everyone says that. But, you know, like last year, we're running hills the day before we leave to go to the Super Bowl. You know, and it's kind of like, well, no, everyone should be resting, right, and getting ready. And we're still running these hills, and we're still conditioning once we get to Houston. So is that mentality of, you know, there's always more room to improve, no matter, you know, what you've done or what anyone else thinks that, you know, you can do. You just have to keep improving and understand that whatever we deem we have to do in this building has to be number one for everyone on the team. It can't be, you know, what I watched on TV the other day and what they said on Patriot All Access, how great we're. It can't be that. It has to be, you know, our one common goal. And, you know, each week we come up with the things we need to do to win the game. Like, that has to be front and center for everyone. And I think when you have that true total buy-in, you have a chance to really win a lot of football games. And then we always talk about, like you said, trying to play your best football as you hit the end of November, December, because that's when, you know, you start to see teams separate and you want to be playing your best. Because, I mean, we saw in 15, like you said, even with injuries, you know, since we weren't playing our best, we saw the difference was very small, but that was a difference of a 2-point loss in an AFC championship game. where we fell a little bit short of our goal.
We're going to take a brief time out here on Season Ticket, but when we come back, Devin McCourty is going to tell us why he thinks media members need to spend more time playing Madden. Stay with us. Welcome back to Season Ticket. If you like Season Ticket, be sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, subscribing is the best way to make sure you get the latest episode as soon as it's available. So I think I'm going to give myself away here, but it's funny, when we watch games, like the media fans, we always want to know, is that man, is that zone? A lot of times it's not that simple. It can be a combination coverage or something else. Are you astonished at how little the media and the fans really know about football?
When I first got to the NFL, I definitely was. I thought there was like some requirements to know some things about football, because like I can watch a game and, you know, I can see something. I'm like, oh, you know, it looks like they rolled over on this side of the field and manned it up backside and, you know, put some things together. And I'm not always right watching because teams do so many different things. But, you know, I could get some idea. And, you know, I guess now that I've been here for a while, I've had conversations with different people, you know, usually like off the record, and we'll talk about something. I'm like, dang, I really don't know any of this stuff. Just out here going off Madden. So, but Madden actually probably could help, you know, a lot.
It does help.
Just look
at
those
things. Most of what I do know, Dev, is from Madden.
You could get the basics down.
Yes, you can.
So, I mean, it's tough too, though. Like some of the things that people come up with defensively, especially, you know, a lot of these coaches have been coaching through a bunch of different eras where, you know, people are running the ball 70% of the time to now it's usually 60 to 40 pass. So you get so many different guys' ideas and a ton of years of experience that, you know, there's times defenses are created and like fundamentally doesn't even make sense, but they'll run it and it'll work because of, you know, whatever tendency that they see from an offense.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I think the other thing is, let's be honest, and Dev, we love having you on the show. We appreciate it. The Patriots are not the most forthcoming franchise about what's going on, about what the strategy is.
Keys to success.
That's one of the keys to success. You know, keep it secret. I think another key to success is the way that Bill Belichick and Nick Caserio, director of player personnel, find guys that maybe are not being used, I don't want to say properly, but to the best of their abilities in other organizations, and bring them here, and they can have really key roles. And I look at Kyle Van Noy as one of those guys. He's been so great for you guys this year. Are you ever amazed at the ability of this franchise to find somebody like a Kyle Van Noy, who sort of had been phased out a little bit with the Detroit Lions, and then he comes here and he's just in the perfect spot, and he's a versatile player who can do so many things, and he's such a big part of your defense?
Yeah, I mean, especially as players, you don't always know other guys or you've seen them play. So you said like KV, when he came in, Tavon Wilson's in Detroit, I'm like, hey, Tay, how did Van Noy do in Detroit? And he was just like, I mean, he did all right. They just didn't play him much. So I can't even tell you anything. I don't really know. And then he comes here and, you know, he kind of learns for a couple weeks, and then he gets out there and he's making plays. He's all over the field. And then, you know, he comes back this year and he takes even more of a leadership role in calling the defense and being able to line other people up and communicate. And I've seen that happen so much now that when a guy comes in, I'm like, oh, this will be interesting to see how he helps us out. You know, I just know somehow he'll have a role and do something because I think they just do a great job of identifying, you know, maybe not the biggest name or, you know, a guy that does what everyone else thinks you have to do great to be a good player, but find guys that they see, you know, he does this really well and this is what we need. Let's go get him. And those guys come in and usually have a great work ethic, and I think that's been the biggest thing of it all, a great work ethic to come in and want to be a good player and want to help us win.
Yeah, I always say to people, like, football is different from the other sports. You know, if you're a baseball hitter, a right-handed slugger, and you're playing, let's say you're playing in the American League, you get traded to another team. A curveball is a curveball, a fastball is a fastball. Football is so system specific, and it's about how the coaches use you and do they put you in a position to succeed. And I think that's one thing this organization certainly does a great, great job of. I want to talk a little bit about off the field now, Devin. There's something really cool going on in the NFL, and it's going to happen this weekend in the league, and that's the My Cleats, My Cause campaign. And this is a way that the NFL has allowed players to express themselves and has allowed them to thank people or to sort of single out causes that are very important to them. And I know that you have a cause that's very important to you and that you're going to single out and bring some attention to with your cleats on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills?
Yeah, it has been cool. I mean, I guess finally the league has let into the creative minds of the players and allowed us to do this. So to see how many guys are getting involved and showcasing what they do off the field. And myself and my brother started a campaign, McCourty Twins Tackle Sickle Cell with Embrace Kids Foundation, and it's been awesome. You know, this year we decided to do, it's our left cleat is a white cleat with the red blood cells that, you know, if you have sickle cell, instead of having the normal oval shape red blood cells, you have these sickle shaped cells that don't move through and don't let air through your body, and sometimes they get all clogged up, and that's when you get crises. And so we showcased that on the left cleat, and then because of the times and the different things that are going on, our right cleat is just an all black cleat, and gold says equality on the back, and then on the front of the toe says, you know, no hate, no racism, freedom. So it's, I just think this cause is great that guys get to showcase, you know, whatever's on their heart, whatever they're passionate about. You know, a lot of people come to watch us play on Sundays and, you know, obviously love the way their favorite team plays or their favorite player plays. And I think it's cool, you know, for 1 week out of the season, they get to see, you know, some of the things the players are doing. And hopefully going forward, the league finds different ways and different avenues to allow players to even, you know, get that outreach more of the different things that are important to them.
Yeah, I think a lot of times people forget, Devin, that there are human beings under those helmets. You know, you guys don't exist just to play football. And I know this cause is something that's personal for you. You have an aunt and an uncle that have sickle cell. And I think it's great that you and Jason have dived right into this. And you also mentioned something I didn't know about the other cleat, sort of with the equality on it and all that stuff. People don't always take positively to athletes as activists. I think you guys experienced that this year at that game against the Houston Texans here, which came a couple days after President Trump had made some comments about NFL players who decided to kneel during the national anthem as a way to bring attention to racial inequality and police brutality. You're a captain, as I mentioned before. A lot of guys came to you after that and were sort of wondering, what should we do? How did you approach that situation? And how did you ultimately make the decision that you guys are not just athletes, but you are citizens, and you wanted to express yourselves as U.S. citizens before that game?
Yeah, I think, you know, for us as athletes, we're always talking about different things that are going on. You know, obviously, most people only care about the football side for us, but, you know, in the locker room, we're always talking about different things. And it was a different type of thing when that came up, just to be in the locker room. And like you said, being one of the older guys, being, you know, black guy on the team, and a lot of players coming up to you. And it was kind of like, my whole thing was, I kind of feel a certain way, but I don't want guys to do something just because, you know, I felt, you know, I thought it was important to kind of feel how a lot of guys felt, you know. And I want to say that happened on a Friday night, and we came in Saturday that morning, and guys just were talking, you know, talking about their feelings. We had chapel that night where we talked about our feelings and how we felt, and you know, I thought that was probably the best part when, you know, we got in chapel and guys just kind of opened their heart up to, you know, not just be angry, you know, to kind of see a bigger picture and not sit there with a bunch of anger on your heart. And I thought that was cool, and to see that. And I think what's come from it has been probably the best thing, you know, with the Players Coalition, started by Malcolm Jenkins and Anquan Boldin, and all the work they've done, and now included a ton of players from across the league to get out there and, you know, try to actually do actionable things that can help different communities, different things, whether it's justice reform, whether it's education, whether it's different ways to work with the police and police brutality, all those different things of trying to network ourselves throughout all 32 teams in the league and try to really make the NFL also involved and to make that a mission of, you know, NFL and the players, because I think it is important to everyone. Like, I know we have a great owner, Mr. Kraft, who does a ton of things in the community in this area, in the whole New England area, to help things out. And, you know, you can tell that it's important to him too. So a moment in time that was so hectic and so controversial, I think will actually probably turn out for the better of the game and help America.
Yeah, I mean, did you feel a lot of pressure on you on that one? And obviously, there, you know, this happened, you said, you know, before a game. the president criticizing NFL players, and it was on September 24th here at Gillette Stadium. 18 Patriots players, including yourself, decided to take a knee during the anthem. But just that whole thing, that whole decision, did you feel like a lot of pressure in terms of what the team was going to do or what guys were going to do? Or did you just know, like, you know, this is what I feel like is right?
No, it was definitely pressure, but I think maybe because as athletes, you kind of, you got to be used to that. I remember Coach Shiano used to always say to us as leaders, you know, to be a good leader, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable. And, you know, that's usually, you know, when people need leaders the most, when it's times that make a lot of people uncomfortable, you know, people that if you want to be a leader, you got to be comfortable in that situation, knowing that it's not going to be easy. It's not going to, you know, be comfortable for you at times. And I thought that was definitely one of those times where, you know, obviously it was pressure, but, you know, at the end of the day, you can only do, you know, what you think is right and what you believe is truth in your heart. So with that pressure came me just, you know, I think understanding like that I was okay with anything that happened because I felt like I was being true to myself and to those guys that looked to me in the locker room.
And let's just reiterate for the 1,000,000th time, I think people know this, but I don't feel like they always hear it. Players who were kneeling or have knelt for the national anthem, it has nothing to do with protesting against great men and women who serve in the United States military and protect us and allow us to have our freedoms and do fun, frivolous things like this podcast. I know you had a great experience at the Air Force Academy with your teammates.
Yeah, and, you know, and that's what's been cool. Since I've been in the league, we've always done great things, either through the team or I've done some other things with veterans and being able to help them out. But then being at Air Force was unbelievable because they treated us great. You know, whether it was the head coach talking to us about the basic training they do or the survival training in the mountains for a week, he told us he had an offensive tackle that lost 20 pounds in a week from survival training. And this week, and I actually talked to my older brother about it when he was in the Army. And he was like, yeah, I mean, you're finding crickets or something, light a fire, roasting them jokers up, eating them, he said, or you hoping to find a rabbit or anything out there and eat that to get some protein in your body. So it was awesome to hear. Obviously, football is on a whole different level of what those men and women do. But as far as a team aspect and coming together for one goal and being prepared for every situation is really what I took out of that.
Yeah, very well said. I didn't know. So you have an older brother who was in the military.
Yeah, he was in the Army.
What's his name?
Larry. Served 4.5 years in the Army. He was in the Persian Gulf War.
Yeah, I didn't know that. That's amazing. So again, you know, thanks to all the veterans, including your brother, Larry, for serving. We're going to wind this down here with sort of fun questions here. One, I think I misread the game book from the team's 35-17 victory over the Dolphins on Sunday because it said Devin McCourty played 3 snaps on offense. The kneel downs?
With Slate got hurt against Denver, we had it in the plan for Oakland, and we was on the sideline, but we ended up having a punt, and I was all in Josh's ear telling him to make sure
Josh McDaniels, offensive coordinator.
Telling him to make sure he got the first down so I get out there and get my first offensive snap. So then Sunday, you know, we come off the field and we're celebrating, and Chad O, the receiver coach, comes up to me, and he was like, go get Cooks out, you're in the game. And I come running in smiling ear to ear looking at Tom like, finally, I get to be on the field with you, man. This is great. So throughout my career, I've been able to play a snap with Randy Moss when he was in the middle on a victory last-second Hail Mary.
Oh, prevent defense.
Yeah,
like prevent. Hail Mary,
he got an interception my rookie year.
Was that in Denver?
No, it was here. I don't remember what game it was, though, in 2010. And then with Gronk in the same prevent defense, now with Tom Brady, I mean, it's not every day you can say you took the field as a defensive player with 3 offensive Hall of Famers. So I'm doing some big things on the offensive side.
Yeah, you are. Last one for you here. Another fun one, I think. Devin, you're friends with Jerron Harmon, your fellow safety and teammate, and also a teammate of yours from college at Rutgers. And I thought Jerron on Sunday did something that was really, really cold-blooded. He took an interception away from Stephon Gilmore, who had a nice 2-interception game lined up there. Jerron and Stephon were literally, we could see from the press box, see them wrestling for the football as they went to the ground. Who was going to get this interception? And Jerron took it.
Gilmore had it. Can you get a half an interception? Like a sack?
That's what Gilmore's wondering. Definitely, it was Gilmore's ball.
Gilmore was battling with Harmon.
I don't know. Like, in baseball, they have sort of like a kangaroo court type thing where guys get fined for stuff like that, like not quite doing the right thing by their teammates. Will you fine? You're a captain. Will you fine Duran for taking that? He has lots of Patriots interceptions. He took that interception away from Stephon, who's his first year with the Patriots, and probably, you know, honestly, deserved it a little more.
It was it's funny because if you play in a secondary, you know when dude's back there, he's going to get the football. He's flying full speed, and they caught it together, and they were both wrestling. But as they hit the ground, it was almost like Steph noticed it was due, and Steph let it go. He let dude take the interception, and as we're going off the field, dude was like, Steph's a real one. He gave me that. He didn't have to do that because I was ready to wrestle for it. And it was funny because Logan Ryan saw the interception, and we still have a group text.
He's a former Patriot, played at Rutgers as
well.
Yeah,
and he told dude, and he was like, just know if that was me and you, I was coming away with that football. And I think it was funny because those guys, they played all 4 years together at Rutgers in their first 4 years in NFL. So they're always competing, going at it. So it was funny to hear that side, but Steph's a good guy because if that was me, I would have been trying to get that pick too, especially, like you said, knowing you already got the first interception. It's nothing like a two-interception game.
Devin McCourty, thank you very much for joining us here on Season Ticket. It was a lot of fun. Always good to talk to you. Always insightful on football matters and other matters.
Oh, no, I appreciate being on. Got a great show.
All right. Thanks, Devin. That's Devin McCourty, Pro Bowl safety for the New England Patriots. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of Season Ticket, a daily podcast from the Boston Globe Sports Department and WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Be sure to tell a friend about us if you like the podcast, and you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a review. I'm Chris Gasper. We'll see you tomorrow.